Welcome to the Parentpreneur Accelerator Podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis Kingsbury.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan.
Hi there, it's Alexis here, and in this week's episode, I'm interviewing Rachel Coyle, who runs a luxury online baby and children's wear boutique called Rosie and Lula, which sells clothes and gifts from newborn babies up to 8 years old. Originally an account manager at a digital marketing agency, Rachel fulfilled her dream of becoming a makeup artist. However, after having her daughter, she decided to have a career break. Having always dreamed of having her own business, particularly an online business, Rachel took the plunge a year after having her second child, Lula, after the urge became strong. Now Rachel juggles her business and mum life with her three children. So in this episode, we're going to be discussing what led Rachel to create Rosie and Lula, the business, and how running an online business can be lonely and the challenges with that and working remotely, and why it's important to connect with other like-minded people. And we'll also be exploring some of the challenges around working as a parentpreneur and building the business too. So Rachel, thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. Well, let's start up with the setup. Take us through the kind of thought processes and so on that led you to set up Rosie and Lula.
To be honest with you, it was actually a very, very quick setup. I think I'm one of those people who's all or nothing. So I'd had Lula, and she was nearly a year, and I had got very into the way I was dressing her, and I started to dress her in quite a traditional way, but I was kind of mixing it up a bit as well, and I just really enjoyed creating her outfits. And having an online business was something I'd always said I'd do, because I knew how flexible it was, and I knew that when I had a family, it would just be something that meant that I could do both, and you know, it would just be a lot easier that way. So I always had it in the back of my mind that I'd create my own business one day. And then obviously having an online business is just a lot easier in terms of premises and the setup of it. And I just decided one evening that why don't I set up an online clothing business, because it was something I'd got so into with Lula. And I think because of working as a makeup artist in the fashion industry as well, I had that interest, and I just felt that I could add something to the baby clothing world, baby and children's wear. So I basically said to my husband that evening, I know I'm going to set up my own business. And I very quickly had the idea to name it after the girls, which now actually is probably not the best thing I ever did, because I didn't actually expect I was going to have Louis. So I now have a business that's only named after my two children. luckily he's a boy. So it's, you know, if it was three girls, it might have been a bit more difficult. But I pretty much the next day contacted the guy who created my websites for me when I was a makeup artist. And I said to him, look, I'm going to set up this business. I'm calling it this. It's, you know, can you help me with a logo? I had a very clear vision of how I wanted the website to look, even though I hadn't even really put much thought into it already. It almost just made me feel like it was meant to be, because I already knew exactly how I wanted it to look. We came up with the logo probably in 2 days, and we used the Shopify platform to create the website. So it really was quite a quick decision.
Wow, love it. And I guess your background in marketing kind of helped with you having kind of the confidence in some of those areas. How else did it sort of help you make your business grow in those early days? You know, how was it in terms of getting your first customers and so on?
I think for me, what I actually, even though I worked in a marketing agency and I had that experience and I knew the different channels that you can use to target your customers, mm-hmm. I wasn't very aware back then because that was over 10 years ago. Social media wasn't really that big back then. So when I was in the agency, we were mostly using email marketing and we were doing web banners. So to be honest with you, this has probably been my way of knowing more about social media, starting my business, because that is how I get most of my business. That's how I target my customers through adverts and promoting posts. So sometimes I look back and I think I don't know really how much of my marketing experience helped me, because it really has been through social media. I think it's just been my general knowledge of brands really as well, because when I was at uni and I studied marketing, I was very into brand marketing. And then I worked in marketing at Weller in hair care, and I relaunched a brand there with the brand manager. So I think I had that knowledge about brands and how important it is to create a brand that's strong and that people recognize and all that. So yeah, I think, to be honest, social media was really the way that I got my first customers, because I set up the account, I created the content for it, and I started to follow lots of mums and people that I thought might find it interesting. And that, to be honest with you, is probably how I got my first orders.
I love it. And I think definitely that feeling of taking some of the things that you've done from previous careers, but actually finding that you learn so much with your own business that actually you couldn't have learnt in an agency or so on. I think it's quite a common feeling that people feel. I guess, as you say, some of the core concepts and things like understand the value of the brand and how to define that and so on was clearly crucial. And I guess also in terms of knowing the importance of niching and getting clear about who your ideal client was, because that's something that strikes me about your business, is that right from the off it's got a very clear sort of customer profile and you know, segment of exactly who you know, what a kind of age of children they are and so on, which is often a common mistake that other business owners make, right? Is not being that specific.
Yeah, exactly.
And so how did you kind of pick that specific segment and get really specific about your niche?
I would say my customer is pretty much me. So I looked at it in that way when I set up the business, and I think that was why it was quite easy for me to set up a business in this area, because having two girls at the ages that they are, like Rosie's 5, Lula's 3, I mean, at the time, you know, they were even younger. So I was like the perfect customer profile, to be honest. You know, I wanted to find luxury children's wear, but I wanted it to be a bit more affordable. And I think it's a midway between the high street brands for kids and then you've got the real, you know, expensive designer brands. So I wanted kind of a midpoint, and I wanted it to be possible to dress your children in a traditional way and also mix it up a bit, make it contemporary, but I didn't want it to be extortionate prices. However, I would say that the customer still needs to be somebody that is willing to spend the money on their children's clothes, because, you know, everyone's different, everyone has a different approach to it, and, you know, it can sometimes be difficult trying to find those customers, actually. But I do find that with my business, that someone will buy from me and then they'll come back and they'll buy again and again. And that for me always makes me feel good. And it makes me feel good knowing that I've targeted the right person, you know, because they're coming back and they're buying again.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's some absolute gems there. I think it's interesting whenever I hear someone kind of describe, oh, well, you know, the perfect customer is me, because of course, you're using shorthand there to kind of basically say, oh, well, you know, it made it quite easy to kind of define who it was, or at least that's kind of where my passion was and so on. But of course, for others, it kind of hides some of some of the thinking and the analysis behind it, which I love because you immediately followed up to explain it. So for example, we could say, oh, so the perfect customer is like Rachel. They their name starts with an R, it ends in an L. They live in Rachel's house. It's like it's not that it is you. It's that there are certain things about you which you then elaborated on in terms of, you know, family setup with age of children, but also in terms of, you know, your buying profile and the fact that you want nice things, but at the same time, you know, careful with the money, but at the same time willing to spend, also willing to express loyalty, and all those sorts of things that are the traits that you hold. And that you've identified, actually, yeah, those are the customers that I don't want to work with. And I think that is really interesting because, of course, as someone with a marketing background, I suspect that comes more second nature to you than for some people. Like, defining those characteristics is a tough exercise and B, something that they neglect to do early on. And certainly I know with my businesses, I was kind of reluctant to get specific early on. And it kind of slowed me down as a result, right? I think I guess in terms of once you've defined who your ideal customer is, how easy has it then been to find people with those characteristics, you know, on social media and so on? How have you gone about that?
I think what I've realised through social media is that, obviously, as everyone knows, it's image-led. So people want to see nice imagery. I think the difficult thing at the minute is engagement as well. So you have that to battle against all the time. But what I decided to do was, I mean, I could have just had an Instagram page where I just took the product shots of everything I sell, and I could have just put them up on there. And I just, to be honest with you, I don't think I would have got much engagement from that anyway, because there's just nothing about those images which is drawing people in. So I decided that what I was going to do was I was going to take a selection of the pieces that I sell. I sell different brands, and what I like to do is to not really present them as a separate brand. I like to mix up the brands together and create outfits and actually show people how they can dress their kids, whether it's using Rosie and Lula as the models and now Louis, which I try and do in a very private way. I try to do it so that they're not really, their face isn't showing too much, and, you know, because I don't really want them to constantly be there on the Instagram page to sure. followers. So it's a mixture really of, yeah, putting them on them and then creating these flat lay pictures, which have gone down amazingly well, because I think some people might go on the website and think, oh, I love that, but I just can't figure out what to wear it with, and, you know, what will it look good with. So that's what I spend a lot of my time doing, is creating these outfits, which does take a lot of thought. It does take a lot of time. And then, you know, making them look good. And yeah, then you've got to make your Instagram look good, because you need someone to look at the page and immediately say, oh, wow, that looks like a good profile, I'm going to follow that. So really it's been through that. And the other thing that I have done in a very careful way is I've tried to target the Instagram influencers, which can be tricky as well, because a lot of the time nowadays it will actually involve paying them, which is something I've never done. And I really try and stick to the fact that I will never do that, because I actually want people to like my brand because they like it. So it's been a mixture of putting outfits together, putting them out there, and then obviously people can click the links and shop those products, and then using the girls and putting clothes on them. And I just try and get pictures of them really when they're having fun and they don't really know I'm doing it. And then through influencers, or, you know, people of high status, or people, I mean, and it's really nice for me when someone actually shows an interest in the website first, and then I develop a relationship with them, and then we decide on something that we'll collaborate on together. So, yeah, I would say it's been a mixture of those three things, really.
That's amazing and such good advice. I think social media is an area that For some people, it sort of comes naturally. For a lot more people, I think it doesn't. And particularly for those that are starting businesses, it can be incredibly daunting. And I think you've just, you know, beautifully described how you can really make it work for you by getting clear about, you know, a proposition or some value that you're going to add, in your case through matching outfits and so on, and then doing that in a really engaging and an attractive way. And as you mentioned, you know, it's about image and making sure that people sort of see a positive thing that they aspire to and are therefore attracted to. And I think that's really, really good guidance on how to use that. For you then, like, how quickly did you go from basically zero customers and how quickly did it kind of grow and scale up? Because I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, they kind of imagine that everything's happens really quickly, and yeah, within a year I'll be raking it in and so on. And sadly, that's not the reality for I think any entrepreneur right now. I think I maybe know one or two, but the business is actually more likely to then go pop after a year or two rather than go hockey stick growth. So what was your experience? How quickly did it grow, and what drove that growth?
It's funny because I totally agree with you. I think slow growth is better. I think it gives you time to think about things and work on things that, you know, might not be working. And it just gives you, you can just be a bit more logical about it when it's slower. But the funny thing is it's not grown to a massive level yet, obviously, but it did grow quite quickly. And it was something that I didn't really expect. I remember when I set it up and I had the conversation with my husband, and, you know, I had two young kids, and he sort of said, you know, just kind of start it slow and then see how it goes. And then when the girls start school, you can really sort of grow it. So I'm just one of those people that when I get that determination and when something starts going well, I can't really stop. So I started to find new brands quite quickly, and I met with them and I spoke to them and I explained about my website. And I was very lucky in that lots of these brands were really interested in me stocking their products. So I think that I needed to find these new brands because I needed to build this Rosie and Lula brand, and I needed to make the website, you know, look and feel how it does now. And I did take on a lot of new brands quite quickly. I was very careful with my ordering of stock. I tried to not order a ridiculous amount. So I was very careful and I was good with that. But I did grow it. And I think because of social media and because of Instagram and because of how well it went, that also contributed to the number of orders I was getting. I think at the beginning, there were days where I'd have no orders at the beginning, and there were days where I'd have one. And then, you know, I remember if there was a day when I had like three orders, I'd be really excited. And I was like, oh, I can't believe it, I've had three orders. And I think when you've started something up and you don't even know if you're going to get one order, even just getting a few is amazing. So it did start slowly, the orders, but then it did very quickly grow, and the sales each month, you know, were doing really well. They were always going up. And then I think after about a year, I spoke to Chris again, and then I'd found out I was pregnant with Louis, and I panicked a bit because I thought, oh no, like, this business is growing and it's doing well, and I'm so happy with it, and I'm going to have another baby, and how am I going to manage? You know, am I going to have to stop it? Am I going to have to slow it down? So I have to say that it actually didn't make any difference to the growth. It just, in my mind, it just, I think, made me think about it a bit more. But then, yeah, even in the second year, because we've just reached, it was October where we were 2 years old. The second year, the sales more than doubled. So it's kind of been a slow growth, but a bit of a fast growth in terms of the way I probably imagined it to go, to be honest.
Yeah, indeed. No, I think that's great. And I think I love your attitude towards it, because essentially what you're saying is the slow growth is good because you get to improve the processes, but at the same time, when things go better than planned, particularly in the world of sort of, you know, social media and marketing and all these sorts of things that can suddenly go pop and whatever, yes, you need to capitalize, but at the same time, be very careful. And I think, as you say, like being careful with your stock levels is a particularly great example, right? Because it'll be really, you know, it's a little bit like the classic advice around fads, you know, where they say that it's very rare that a fad makes a lot of money. Like the makers of Hula Hoop, for example, you know, the not the crisp, but the plastic ring, didn't make a load of money as a result, or it's said that it's not. I need to check whether this is an urban myth, but it makes sense, which is that to cope with the massive uptick in demand, you can imagine the increases in infrastructure, etc., you'd need to do, and then of course the demand drops off a cliff and you've still got all of your costs, and it's very difficult to then drop those as quickly, and as a result you spend the money that you've earned.
You need to be aware of the trends, I guess, as well. And I know in children's wear and baby wear, I wouldn't really say the trends are that fast moving like they are in women's fashion, but you still have to be aware that, for example, you've got high street brands which are now creating products very similar to those more expensive brands, and you just have to be so aware, because, you know, the minute I realize something isn't selling very well, I stop stocking it straight away. I can't even take that risk. I'm just very careful.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. After you started growing the business, and then along came child number three. How did that impact your business? aside from giving you an existential crisis for the name.
Well, there was that. I mean, I could have had another Lula, but no, that wouldn't have worked. I think that I had a lot of worry that, after Louis was born, luckily not to do with Louis. Louis's been amazing. But in terms of the business, I knew that I'd had a baby and there was no chance I was going to be working and coming up to my office every day. But I had to still be on the ball with it, because I didn't have anybody else helping me. And I've only recently just hired somebody who is working 2 days a week, and she's been absolutely amazing. And she's been contributing a lot to the content that we're creating for Instagram, blog, the website, and the emails that we're sending out to customers. So that has been amazing for me, because I did get to a point where I just thought, I can't do this on my own anymore. You know, I'm fulfilling the orders every day. I'm basically doing all of it, and it just made me realize that I now have three children, and at that point I didn't have any help, because we were looking for somebody, we're looking for a nanny, and we weren't very lucky in our search, so we decided to just take a break from looking, and I just sort of said, look, you know, I'm their mum, I can do this, it'll be fine, you know, I can work in the evenings and I'll make it work. But what I realized was that was a really bad idea, and I have to say, we now have somebody amazing helping us with the kids, and it just makes it a lot more easy for me to actually do my work in a nature which isn't stressed, and I don't feel anxious about anything, because I know that the kids are safe, and I know I can see them as much as I want as well. But I would say for a couple of months after I had Louis, there was a definite slowdown in everything, really. You know, I wasn't really posting enough on social media. I was really slow at getting back to people on email. And then once everything kind of fell into place, like I think it does when you have a baby and you get to that point where they're not newborn anymore and they're a bit easier to manage and you just feel a bit more confident as a parent, that's when I got a bit more back on the ball, and I hired Ellie. I think I would say since maybe September, I feel like things are back on track again, and, you know, the orders are, they're good at the minute. Awareness on social media is good, and engagement. So, yeah, I would say I did have a bit of a dip, but I'd say that's normal. And I don't know,
Absolutely.
that could have gone either way, really.
Yeah,
Yeah.
indeed. Yeah, no, and it sounds like identifying it early and then taking those steps is the key, right? And that's what you did in spades. In terms of the help and support that you've now got around you, what's that team look like? And how much of that team do you work with directly in person? Do you have people working remotely across the team? What's kind of the support network you've got there?
So is this for Rosie and Lula or the or actual Rosie and Lula?
Arguably both, right? Because
Yeah.
to some extent, it's when we talk about parentpreneurs, it's
Yeah.
the dream that we're trying to live is to do great things out in the world from a business perspective, whilst also getting time with the family that we love. So, yeah, what support have you got on both side, and how's that working?
Well, I firstly have an amazing husband who couldn't be more helpful, to be honest, with my business and with the kids. And he also helps with the accounts, which is amazing. And I think just having that support from somebody in the family is really important. I don't know where I'd be without him. And then we have our nanny Daisy, who again has just been absolutely amazing, and the girls love her. And yeah, it enables me to, if I have to go to a meeting, or if I have to go up to London, or if I have one of my PR events, then I it's just so much nicer knowing that the kids are safe and with somebody that they like, and that makes a huge difference. And in terms of the business, I have a very helpful dad who has been helping me a lot. And actually, even my mum, there's been times when they've come over and helped me send orders out because I just have so many, or I have stuff on. So that's always so helpful. And then Ellie, who works for me 2 days a week, she does a mixture of working remotely from home, and then some days she'll come here. She does a lot of the photography for me now. So when she does that, she does it at mine. And then, yeah, I think I also have a PR agency, and I work with a lovely lady called Amy, and we meet quite regularly as well. So I think I would love my team to grow, but like I said, with the way I manage the stock, I just have to do it in a slow way because I need to just see how things are going first, and watch the progress before I make those decisions. But I think at the minute, I would say I have a really good team around me that enables me to at least focus on the business the way it is right now.
I think that's fantastic. And I completely agree that, as you say, just like the stock, you have to take things in small steps. And often that's hardest with the team, right? Because with stock, I know there are exceptions, but broadly it's you can add an additional small number of units. It's a much more sliding scale. Whereas often it's quite difficult to find a solution that works that isn't either zero of a person or one of a person. And actually, cost-wise, there's quite a big difference. And yet, in the early days, you haven't got enough work for a whole person.
No, that's totally right. I kind of I'm getting to grips with this whole, taking risks, not taking the risk. It's all a bit of a minefield sometimes, but I'm learning as I go along, I think. And I think sometimes you have to take them and just see what happens. But yeah, I'm still very, very careful, I think.
Yeah, and I think the you're currently using the classic ways that really support that kind of careful approach, which is family, friends, etc., helping out where needed. Also having support on the family side, so that actually it frees you up more, and that that you've got as much time as you can to put into the business. And then I think, as you highlight, having people who aren't full time but actually provide part time support can be a really great way of doing that. And it reminds me that on my finance team for my software business, we recently rolled off someone who had been supporting us on a contracting arrangement, because we've got to a point where we can have someone within our you know, one of our full-time staff who's kind of supporting the finance. And that, you know, that felt like a long process to get there, where previously, you know, kind of finance was something I was very comfortable with, so that was all me. And it just, yeah, slowly getting someone in and doing a few hours and then that growing and so on. Yeah, it just, as you say, you have to take that careful, slow approach, which can be tough and can feel scary at times, but it's the right thing to do. In terms of then, because one of the challenges, of course, with doing that is that it can make it odd in terms of the feeling of the extent to which you have a team, right? Because of, you know, I think I've talked in the past on this podcast about, you know, I've got a team now. They're kind of globally distributed and remote, but they all work full time, and at least 7 of us do. And as a result, it's important to keep that in a strong connection and keep everyone up to date, etc. So we have to work quite hard on meeting rhythms, with dailies and weekly meetings, etc., to keep everyone connected. How are you finding that, you know, particularly with when you've got someone who's a couple of days and then your dad is helping some of the time, you know, are you finding that that's currently a challenge? What's working for you right now?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a bit of a challenge, because I think when it's just you running your business, you feel that you don't need to update anybody else because it's all in your head and you know what's going on. And then I think when you start to work with other people, you realise that actually they need to know what's going on as well. And, you know, I need to actually create that time once a week to actually sit with that person and update them, because they're not going to give me their full potential if they don't know everything that's going on in the business. And that is something I'm learning at the minute, definitely, because I think my plan going forward is what my husband's always said to me, which is the things that you can't do and you're not as confident with, get someone else on board to help you with those things. So, you know, for example, Ellie is absolutely amazing at photography, and, you know, she's been great creating the emails. And, you know, that was the reason why I wanted to also take somebody on, because I wanted someone else's opinion and someone else's view on my business. You know, it's not just me. You know, I totally value people's advice and opinion. I need to actually get used to keeping her up to date more and letting her know what's going on. We'll be doing it through weekly meetings, and I mean, a lot of it's through email, but I just feel that sometimes I really like sitting down with somebody face to face and actually going through these things, because it's very, very easy to just talk on email nowadays and WhatsApp. And I think that just for us all as people, it's just so much nicer to actually sit face to face with somebody instead.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to some extent, you know, it can be quite a lonely thing, right? Doing, you know, particularly in the early days of the business, you know, you have to get your head down and working on doing basically everything yourself, and then occasionally having those touch-ins with the other members of the team. And as you say, getting them in person is great, and you know, you send messages, etc. But there's still, compared to say working in working for an employer with hundreds of other employees, it can be quite a lonely experience. Is that something that you've experienced, and how have you kind of coped with that?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think also it's being a mum and having your own business, which can be lonely. I think that I just kind of feel that I can't sit down and chat to anybody like I'd want to about my business, you know, because I think you sometimes feel that people, they are interested to a certain extent, but, you know, they're not going to be interested in your worries about stock levels or which brands to stock and which brands to not stock and things like that. So you feel very much like you don't really know who you'll sit down and talk to about it. I talk to my husband a lot about things, and he's really helpful, but It is so different because when I've worked in the past, I've always been in an office or part of a team, and I've enjoyed that, and I think it's important. And it is my, it was one of my goals for the future with this business, you know, is to have a larger team, hopefully. But yeah, the loneliness thing is strange, and I think you just have to, you have to just really try to meet with your suppliers and meet with anybody that you're working with or collaborating with, because you just don't know what you might get from those conversations, and you don't know what friends you might make. And sometimes you can end up making, you know, really amazing new friends that you never thought you would. So I think it's really just about making sure you carry on communicating and you don't get stuck in a rut of just sitting in your office. Like, for example, maybe going out. I sometimes enjoy going out and working somewhere else. I think that's also nice, change of environment. But yeah, it is quite lonely, because I think even being a mum is quite lonely sometimes, especially when you have a really, really small baby. And so, yeah, I'd say it's a similar approach to that, is it's just getting out of the house and just communicating with people face to face, really, like when you're a mum.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the advice around connecting with some of the people that are kind of part of the supply chain of your business as well, you know, whether suppliers, customers, etc. Because partly because that's a good thing to do. So frankly, if nothing else comes of it, then it's probably good for your business. But also, as you say, like, you could go out and attend baby groups, etc., and build some friends, but not necessarily friends that you're going to have deep conversations about the workings of your business and so on. And frankly, if you're starting your own business whilst also having kids, you're probably the sort of person that likes talking about the business and has that passion for it and is interested in what other people think and what they're doing with their own businesses or whatever. And so I think, yeah, as you say, like, speaking to other people that you're working with can mean that you build friendships with people who are implicitly likely to want to talk about that kind of stuff as well. And so I think that's really a really great advice. I think it's something that I probably came later to and really only found through starting to get kind of coaches and mentors. Initially ones that I paid for, and then a wider mix to kind of get that. I love your suggestions also around sort of just getting out the getting out the house, getting out the office, going and working somewhere else to give you that change of scenery as well. I think that's really good advice.
Yeah, I think any events as well are always great for a business, like PR events, anything to build awareness. Because even when you do those, you know, you meet new people, and it's so surprising sometimes the people you meet, and you know, you strike up a relationship with somebody and you never thought you would, and you end up like talking to those people a lot, and you know, you get good advice from those people. And even recently we went to the Baby Awards in London. And even just going to that event, you know, you get to meet people, and it's all just really valuable, I think.
Yeah, completely agree. And any things that you found work for you particularly to kind of find people who are like-minded? Because I know that for some people, attending events can be something that fills them full of anxiety and stress and so on. And then the idea of, you know, in inverted commas, networking fills them full of dread. Like, is there anything that you've found that kind of works to A, make that easier, and B, kind of make it a bit more social and help you quickly find people who are like-minded, rather than, you know, just ending up with a load of people who you have met and have got their business card but have no plans to contact again?
I think that the most important thing is to have confidence in yourself and in your business, because if you're going to go to any event or any networking, I think if you go there thinking you're not worthy of it, I think you're going to find it really hard. And I think I probably did start off going to things with that kind of imposter syndrome thing and thinking that I wasn't worthy. But I think the minute you change your mindset into thinking, actually, I have created a successful business here that people actually like, and I have the proof of that, then actually I should be proud of myself and I should be proud of it. And I should feel confident to go and talk to other people who are doing a similar thing about what I'm doing. So I think the confidence thing is really important. And when I've had PR events for my business where I've invited a group and we've had a brunch or a lunch, afternoon tea event. And I think it's just, it's so important who you invite to those events, because I have Amy is really amazing at helping to choose who we're going to invite. And, you know, we kind of make sure that everybody in the room is, you know, they're quite similar. Everyone's got young children. Some of them have their own businesses as well, whether it's in fashion or even just baby products, or they might be a blogger. And everybody's just got that same sort of, they're going in the same direction kind of thing. So I think that has just made it very much easier to communicate with these people. And, you know, I do end up talking to them again and I do end up contacting them. And then, for example, they come to future events. Another good way is I did a show last summer and it was called Wild Tweed, and it was a country show. And there was a tent, there was a big marquee, and it was for small brands to go and have a stand and to sell their products. So I chose to have a stand there. And even just things like that, you know, the people you meet, just meeting other brands, it doesn't even matter what they are. You know, they're not just other kids' wear brands. They could have been anything. They were like interior brands, jewelry. There was a woman there who had a t-shirt brand. And I think it's just sometimes you just click with people. And if somebody has their own business as well, even just that is something that brings you together. And then everything else, I think, just depends on, you know, whether you click or not, to be honest.
I think that's fantastic advice. I love that. I think to some extent, the advice of go where your customers are, you know, through events and through, you know, as you do social media as well. But then the fact that you're then open to, rather than just looking at those other people around you as, oh, well, here's the competition. Also, you know, also fighting for the money in my customer's wallet, and actually using it as an opportunity to build connections, I think is such great advice. I think that's so strong. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay. I just it's so important for me that for example, on social media, other small brands similar to Rosie and Lula would show the support for me as well. So I think, yeah, I do think it's really important to not see similar businesses as a threat to you, you know, because everybody's in the same shoes, and yeah, it's nice to just all support each other.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so in terms of the kind of challenges of running the business as a parentpreneur, you know, some of the sort of difficulties that parents often struggle with when they're running a business is that, you know, they can the balance of how they spend their time can be a challenge. They can feel guilty around, you know, working while still having small children at home. You know, it can be quite tricky to kind of set up routines and make things run smoothly. What have you found most challenging, and what's worked best for you?
I think at the start for me, I didn't really have that boundary where I said to myself, I'm not going to pick up my phone, or I'm not going to check my emails when I'm around the kids. And what I found was that if I was with them at the time, I might have been in the playroom with them, and I'd see that I'd had an email or something to do with the business come up on my phone, and I'd look at it, and then I would find myself automatically become really impatient with them. And Chris always said to me, Chris, who's my husband, he always says, the reason you're impatient right now is because you're looking at something on your phone. And he was totally right. It is so true. You're trying to look at something. You're trying to read an email. So you have other thoughts going in your head as well as looking after your kids. And I think I've just really learned to actually put it down on the side, face down, because as you know, it just lights up all the time when you get notifications, and then go and actually spend time with them, because I've you know, life's just too short, and you know, it goes by too quickly, and I don't want to really miss anything. So yeah, I've just learned to have a bit more of a balance. But I mean, there's still so many moments where I'm checking my emails because it's just me, and I get customer inquiries daily, and I sometimes will get customer inquiries at 10 o'clock at night, and I was responding to them and thinking that I should respond to them, and then actually I thought, hang on a minute, I'm a small business run by one person, and I really should only be responding to these inquiries in working hours. So I've then now set a rule that I will only respond to these customer queries between, you know, 9 and 5:30. Sometimes I do a bit later, but I think that was so important because I think the minute you open an email and you're relaxing, then you immediately stop relaxing from that minute, and it just ruins your evening or your relaxation. So I think it's so important to try and just actually switch off at times, because you can otherwise just really, you can just really overwork yourself, to be honest.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's useful, and I think this is something that I've developed, particularly in the kind of later years, is it's useful to almost look at your business, even in the very early days, as if you're designing it for when it's bigger and that you're kind of not in it. And so unless you imagine that you're going to hire people who have to have their phones on and checking emails at all hours, or that perhaps you believe it's going to be super important that you hire people across multiple time zones and shift patterns to cover a long, you know, daily opening hours time, then you shouldn't do it from the start, right? And it's such a tricky thing to decide, because partly because in the early days you don't know what works and what's not, and partly you're just excited to get a customer email, never mind what time it is. It's like, I've actually got a customer, hooray. But the tricky bit is, particularly as you say, you know, that grows, and suddenly you find yourself being snappy with children because you've got a customer wanting a refund or whatever, which is when you then step outside yourself is ridiculous, but the time is very difficult to see. So I think that's really great advice. Well, unfortunately we're running out of time for this interview, but this has been absolutely fantastic. Before we wrap up, obviously, I highly recommend that people check out Rachel's business, Rosie and Lula, and we'll make sure that we get the links to the website and also social media pages on our show notes. But from your side, Rachel, any other links you'd recommend, resources that have been particularly useful to you, other ways in which people can connect with you?
I would definitely, I know I've spoken about this so many times, but I really do think social media can be a very positive thing. It can lead you to meet people, communicate with people. And, you know, if you don't feel as confident meeting with someone face to face first, then at least you can contact them through a message. So I would really recommend that. I have found, as well as having my business, but also alongside that being a mum, I've actually found that some of the Instagram accounts you can follow are just really helpful, to be honest. And there's one called the Mum Club, which I'd highly recommend, which I just find is really supportive to mums, and it's lighthearted, it's funny, it doesn't take life too seriously, and I think it's just amazing.
No, to be honest, it's interesting. We tend to find that people on this podcast are kind of split between those that are very focused on their industry, and therefore, you know, lots of most of their resources, their reading, etc., is in the industry, on their product, etc., which I believe is the case for you, based on the huge amount of research you do on your products. Yeah. And then you get others where actually most of their reading is on the art of business and, you know, how they do that. And so I you know, which is why I'm always comfortable with both. I think that you know, we all have our preferences and so on.
I mean, I follow a lot of people on Instagram who have their own businesses, particularly women, and I always find them really helpful. I went to a talk up in London, and it was by Sheer Lux, which I'm sure you might have heard of, and it was an Entrepreneur's Day, and that was an amazingly interesting day where lots of entrepreneurs, most of which had quite big businesses, for example, not on the high street. And that was really, really interesting. It's kind of just like I said earlier, just actually meeting with people and chatting with somebody who also has a business, whether it's a startup business or it's a highly successful business. I just think you can get so many ideas and advice, and you can build your confidence that way too. Because sometimes you just need to hear one thing from one person and it will just make your day better when you might be feeling a little bit down about the way your business is going that day.
I think that's fantastic, and I'll make sure that we include that as a note, because I think as you say, you know, attending some of those events can be really powerful. We've talked about connecting people, and I'll make sure that I include a link to perhaps some of the events at Sheer Lux as well. So that's brilliant.
Good. And I was also thinking, I just always make sure you're knowing what your, you know, competitors are doing, really, other brands similar, what are they doing? I just think it's good to be aware of everything really in the industry, and, you know, who's buying it, why they like it, you know, what you could maybe do.
Love it. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Rachel. It's been awesome talking to you and hearing about Rosie and Lula and Rosie and Lula and Louis. Thank you again, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you so much, and you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.